Blog Talk Radio.
I'm alright. Nobody's heard about me. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let it be? I'm alright.
Welcome to Own Your Life with me, your host, Dennis Carradine. The road to owning your success takes dedication, hard work, education, and change. This show is dedicated to helping you start on the path to owning your success and your life. Good evening, everyone. It's Dennis Carradine. This is Own Your Life. Welcome to the show tonight. It's been a while since I've been on the air, but you know, as they say, life gets in the way sometimes, but we're back. First and foremost, I'm going to try to get back regular on the podcast, so stay tuned for Wednesday nights, 10 o'clock is our normal time here, but you can always check us out on blogtalkradio.com/Dennis Carradine, and we're on for Own Your Life. That's the radio station here. Also, check me out on Facebook at facebook.com, /Dennis Carradine Jr. You can check out the foundation at facebook.com/TheTraumaSurvivorsFoundation. Check me out on Twitter at Dennis Carradine, or just, again, follow me here on Blog Talk Radio. You could also give me an email with any questions, thoughts, concerns, ideas, or just to say hi at Dennis@NewPerspectivesInc.com or Dennis@TheTraumaSurvivorsFoundation.com. So the epidemic of mass shootings. First and foremost, let me say this, and let me say this in all respect and in all due diligence. My heart, anytime this happens, my heart completely goes out to the victims, the survivors, the families, the law enforcement, the firefighters, the paramedics, everyone involved in the mass murders and the mass shootings. And San Bernardino, California, is no exception to that rule of mine, that the shootings and the 14 murders are just astronomical anymore. It's becoming commonplace. Actually, someone had said, you know, this is the new norm, that there's not a day goes by or a week that goes by that we're not hearing about some other type of violence. And this violence has gotten completely out of control. We know, and we know based on history at this point, that mass shootings have gone to just unbelievable levels at this time. We could look back over the years, and we could also see a steady increase in mass shootings, but we see a steady decrease in the amount of violence overall, which is bizarre. It's, at least in our society, exceptionally bizarre. So tonight, I wanted to give a little bit about some ideas, some thoughts, some sides. Keep in mind, I'm not going to go into the political rhetoric of things. This isn't what I do here. I want to give information. I want to give some thoughts. I want to look at what is going on with these mass shootings and if there is anything that we can do to change it, or if anything we could do as a society, maybe as an individual, to turn this around so that it's not happening. You know, at the other stance is that, yeah, of course we have to kind of look at gun control laws and we have to look at political stuff, but it's not my job to either look at the Republican or Democratic side or say what the liberals are saying, what the conservatives are saying. I'm not going to take those sides. That's not what my job is. My job, you know, out of anything, as a trauma therapist, is to pick up the pieces after these things happen. And I want to talk about what's truly and really happening. We have to understand, every time a mass shooting takes place in America, things get decidedly more political for a little while. On one end of the spectrum, liberals start decrying gun laws as the catalyst for U.S. mass homicides. Conservatives point their fingers at violent movies and video games. And both sides turn to that lovely excuse that's always, always there, which just absolutely angers me, that it's obviously a mental health-related issue. I was reading through some of the stats and some of the figures of what was going on, and I came across a stat that I thought was – I guess it's not more of a stat. It's just plain numbers. of the different presidencies and the different shootings over the years. And I want to talk about it. I don't want to give it any, again, no political stuff, but this is just kind of where we are in our society. So the little meme or whatever we'll call it said, during the Reagan era, there were 11 mass shootings. During George Bush Sr.'s, there were 12 mass shootings. During George Clinton, with Parliament Funkadelic, sorry. With Bill Clinton, there was 23 mass shootings. George Bush Jr., 16 mass shootings. And with President Obama, there has been 162 mass shootings in his presidency. Now, I have to put this aside. The majority of death, if we really look at it, was during George Bush Jr.'s administration, obviously, with the attacks during September 11th, with over 3,000 Americans killed at that time. And out of the 162 mass shootings during Obama's administration, it has not equaled that amount. We look at the FBI statistics that show the levels of violent crimes in the United States, including murder, has steadily declined since 1991. Acts of murder and non-negligent manslaughter still claim about 15 lives a year, which is more than half of all such violent crimes in a given year, are typically committed with guns. There's no joke to that. And over the past 30 years, public mass shootings have resulted in the murder of 547 people, with 476 other persons injured, and that was in March 2013. So even with the FBI statistics, and remember most statistics are about 2 years old, that we could probably, again, add an additional 100 people on both sides of death and murder. Just within the past 2 weeks, we've had two mass shootings, one in Colorado and now one in San Bernardino, California. So let's look at the things that don't result in mass shootings right now. I'm going to say something somewhat controversial because there is that political divide to this. Here's something that's kind of interesting. Guns and gun ownership do not create mass shootings. Okay, hold back. Don't start yelling. People are ready to change the channel right now. Are you kidding me? Blah, 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 blah. No. You need to listen to me out with this one. You need to listen to just a certain percentage, which I think is interesting. I found this percentage. It says, studies find that although the United States has just about 5% of the world's population, the country has 31% of the world's mass shooters. Okay? Reasons of these numbers are complex, and this was by researchers, but the data suggests there's an availability of guns, and perhaps the American obsession with fame may be to blame. Now, we're going to talk about that for a little bit. I had a debate not too long ago about this gun issue, is that what are we actually doing with guns? If we actually counted up all the people who have been killed in mass shootings over the last 30 years, the cumulative body count will equal less than a tenth of 1% of the total number of murder victims in the U.S. over the same time frame. So we know this. This is a small amount. But with all these murders, were guns used? And were these guns used in a way that would create all this problem? Well, no. And we have to decidedly look at that. Yes, guns were used in mass shootings, hence why they're called mass shootings. But in the overall, there's 15,000 people a year, a very small percentage of these murders were committed by gun violence. All right. We also know that we have an array of gun ownership in the U.S. And I think it was interesting to note, or at least that I was looking at to note, that out of all these shootings, with the exception of Columbine, okay, and I say this, with the exception of Columbine, most of these guns were garnished legally by the gun owner. Now, when you say that, or when I say that, people say, well, wait a minute, some of these shooters were kids, so how could they have gotten the guns legally? Okay, let me give you my background for a second, and I will explain a little bit more about the gun control laws and how they really don't apply here. If we look at, you know, my background, I am a gun owner. Yes, I'm a registered Republican. Yes, I'm a Caucasian male and so forth. As a gun owner, as a member of the NRA, and so on, do I walk around with my gun on me? At times I do. Have I ever shot and killed anyone in an act of rage, in an act of violence? No, I have not. Have I used an assault rifle against anyone? No. But has anyone ever taken my weapon and used it against somebody else? Okay, so there's my background with it. But if we look at where guns were purchased with some of these shooters, okay, we could look very specifically to Newtown. Now, also keep in mind, I will never say the assailants' names. I do not give them that fame. I do not give them any little bit. I actually, you know, try never, even in lectures, to use their names strictly because they don't need it. They don't need that recognition. The survivors need the recognition. The victims need that recognition because they were the innocents here. Okay, but we'll go to our assailant in Newtown. He had actually, for what it was worth, he used his mother's weapons. So his mother, who happened to be what we consider a survivalist or a doomsday prepper, had purchased multiple weapons. She purchased them legally. She went out to gun stores and she went out to different gun fairs or whatever they're called, and she purchased these weapons. She brought these weapons home, and she taught her son, who was socially awkward, was somewhere on the autism spectrum, how to shoot. Now, she didn't teach him how to shoot just to scare people. She taught him how to shoot to kill. Okay, that's what a doomsday prepper is going to do. We're going to, if somebody comes on our property, we need to eliminate the target. We will shoot and kill him. Okay? So, he learns this. She has these guns legally. He takes a knife and kills his mother and then steals her guns to commit the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary. All right? Now, here's the deal. Let's put the gun laws into place. Everybody says, well, you know, further gun laws need to be there and so forth. This was a woman who bought these guns legally, and her son took the guns. Okay? Why I say the exception with Columbine. All right? The guns that the two assailants that used were not obtained legally. They were actually found to not be the parents' weapons. So you could check that out. That's out there. They did not steal it. They purchased these weapons illegally. But if we look at Virginia Tech, those guns were purchased legally. Just recently, Aurora, Colorado, with the movie theater, guns were purchased legally. Colorado Springs, just within the past 2 weeks, guns were purchased legally. Okay, so again, the guns are obviously a component in these mass shootings, but they're not creating the mass shootings. Okay, we have to understand that. There's also, you know, the idea that we have guns, that there's tons of guns out there, but we can argue about whether or not even assault weapon sales or moratoriums, ammunition size limits would prevent mass thefts. But the reality is that so many firearms are already out there that a new assault weapon ban probably wouldn't do anything. You know, we have to understand that, is that even if we put in every bit of law to say that, well, you're not allowed to buy a banana clip now and you're not allowed to buy this weapon, we already still have, I think, some percentage for every U.S. citizen. There is at least 6 to 7 handguns that are out there for every U.S. citizen that's alive. So guns aren't the issue. They're just used. Okay, so even if we have the gun laws, it's not going to be the issue. Mental health. Okay, here we go. I said this earlier to someone. I said, do you realize that 60 million U.S. citizens are reportedly on antidepressant medications? 60 million U.S. citizens. Last count, we're around 380, 85 million people in the U.S. Again, we're looking at 5% of the world's population in the U.S. at 385 million or so. Okay, so 60 million of that 385 million are on some sort of antidepressant. Another 30 million, okay, another 30 million around some anxiolytic, which, you know, an anti-anxiety medication. Another 10 to 12 million are on some medication for ADHD, or what we would consider, you know, what the people say, you know, the psychotropic medications or whatever it is, your Adderalls, your Vyvanses, and so forth. So roughly 100 million U.S. citizens out of 385 million are taking some mental health drug, okay? We have to look at that. We also have to understand that at least 20% of U.S. inhabitants have some sort of psychiatric issue, okay? But that 20% isn't running around shooting people, okay? So approximately a fifth of all U.S. adults have some sort of mental health diagnosis, okay? So this mental health debate is driving me insane, okay? But we have to look at the small percentage. 30 to 40% of Americans who own guns commit mass homicide, okay? That is just 30 to 40% of Americans who own guns commit homicide, okay? A similar teensy percentage of Americans with mental health illnesses embark upon shooting sprees. So it's literally this small percentage of people will commit these mass homicides. You know, we're not looking at the mental health population as being the problem here, even though that we're throwing it out saying that they are. Now, granted, some of the mass shootings that have occurred, we have a small percentage, again, that if we look at these people, yes, there has been mental health issues. But the overall of saying that everyone with mental health is going to create a mass shooting, we're going to do a mass shooting, is just ridiculous. So then we go down to the argument of video games. Now, you can go back and listen to my podcast about the school shootings. And I said in that school shooting podcast that we have to rule the entertainment video games right out. Okay, and why? Okay, well, if we kind of look at it, the worst mass school disaster, you know, if we look at it with a number of people killed, actually happened in 1934 in Bath, Michigan. And that was by a teacher who set a bomb in his car, you know, blowing up the school, killing several dozen school kids and officials and so forth. There were no violent video games back then. There were, you know, Nintendo and Sega and Xbox and all that were not available then. So what's going on here? Well, the video game industry generated, just last year, $93 billion in North America alone. The video game industry, let me say that again, generated $93 billion last year in North America alone. Okay? $93 billion. Incredible. So, you know, for us parents that have kids that have video games, or for us people that buy video games, you know, at 50, 60, 75 bucks a pop, we have to understand that that's a lot of money with a lot of people buying these video games, and not everybody's committing mass shootings. Okay? 161 during the past few years during Obama's administration does not equate to that $93 billion. We also understand that box office receipts for the leading violent movies, including first-person shooter movies, okay, topped at $7 billion. It's a lot of people out there that are exposed to violence that are not committing mass shootings. So we can't say that the direct link to mass shooting is going to be watching violent movies or watching video games or playing violent video games. We can't make that connection. Now, people will try, but the numbers just don't show it, okay? They just do not show that it's there. Can we go back and say that, okay, all in 1 year, 15,000 murders that are committed, every single person that committed those murders were watching video games, violent video games, had put in violent movies, had a mental health issue, and had gun ownership. At this point in time, that would be incredible if that was a circumstance, but it's not. It's not. So then we go down to I like this one. This argument has always kind of been there, and it's always been interesting to me. Is that, you know, I guess I'm getting to the age where you look back. Well, back in the day, or you know, when I was growing up, they start talking about the breakdown of the family. You know, that ultimately our core family, our core belief system, that everybody in the U.S. now is not being validated, and it's because it's mommy and daddy's fault. Remember, if we do things wrong, we could just easily go back and blame mom and dad for all of our problems. And then that would make it easy, because then we are not culpable or responsible for anything that we do. Okay, well, let's kind of take a look at that for a second. The breakdown of the family. The family unit was known as mom and dad being married, non-divorced, living in the home with their kids, right? Okay, let's go into these mass shooters. The majority of mass shooters, out of all the ones that have taken place since the 80s, since Ronald Reagan's era, the vast majority, almost 85-86%, have come from intact families. Oh, wait a minute. Let me say that again. The mass shooters, about 85-86%, have come from intact families. Oh, wait, you're right. You're right. There are a few, including Newtown. You know, him up there, his mom and dad were divorced. You are right. There's no lie about that. But 85% came from intact families. That's crazy, isn't it? Intact families. So if the large majority have come from intact families, let's also look at what the other thing would say about the breakdown of the family. So that would say, oh my gosh, you know, these shooters, they must be coming from these horribly abusive families. They must be coming from, you know, the dregs of society. No. The idea is that it's coming from a two-parent household that on the price end are actually a little more well off than the general public, that they grew up in areas where they were getting support. It's just they were singled out in other certain ways. We heard, you know, the shooters in Columbine being bullied. But if you look at that area, the house that both the kids lived in, the average price of those houses were well into the $750,000 range. That both sets of parents were making well over $200,000 a year. And the parents they actually moved into that school district because of how good the school district were. Okay. You look at Virginia Tech. Okay. His parents were intact, lived right outside of D.C., and were paying for his schooling at Virginia Tech, even though they had been there for several years as was going back into graduate school. Okay. Again, If we were to look at, you know, non-intact families, that would say that the majority of mass shooters should have been minority based on percentages of broken families. And that wasn't the case. Most of the shooters at this point have seemed to be Caucasian, come from good households, you know, two-parent households. And ultimately, you know, there's this huge money disparity that they are not coming from these very poor. Now, in Colorado in the past couple of weeks, yes, this guy was a loner. He was, you know, living in a trailer and so forth. But again, like I said, the majority, 85%, there are those folks that don't fall into that majority. Okay, so there we go. Now let's continue to look at this and let's continue to move further. So we have guns. We have our entertainment, the mental health issue. We also have the breakdown of the family. Okay, let's get into it. Another one that I heard that I thought was really interesting that we could throw away and I think very quickly is it's because we have a society right now that are afraid of the police. So these people take violent actions because of the police. I thought this was absolutely 100% absurd when this argument came across me. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Without the police at this point in time, and I want you to look at the police response from San Bernardino, California. Without the police's response right now, instead of 14 dead, there could have been 100 dead. There could have been 200 dead. The police came in very quickly, very sharply. I mean, if you look at those images of those police, they came from everywhere to try to stop the violence. Okay? Outside of a mass shooting, let's look at the terrorist attack. Okay, let's go to the Boston Marathon. All right? The police were involved right from the get-go. Now, here's the deal. Obviously, I am pro-police. I am pro-emergency services. There's no joke to that. But I'm also pro-American. You know, I want things to work out well for people. But if we know that during these times of shooting, police and emergency services are running into the scene where everybody's running out. And images of that were thrown all across the newspaper, especially during the Boston Marathon bombings, where the bombs went off. You saw the runners run away, but you saw police, emergency medical, and run towards that sound because they knew that's where the victims were going to be. Okay, so we have, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement saying that we should not trust the police and the police are horrible and all that. People, get a grip on this. Yes, police shootings are a tragedy. But if you look at the police shootings over the United States, it's something like an astronomical low amount of 0.003% of an officer killing someone else based in a heinous crime or a violent crime. It's this low percentage. Most of them are there to stop the violence. So, okay, let's do away with the police. Okay, let's get rid of them all. Where is our society going to be when mass shootings occur? It is going to be in a very dangerous, dangerous place. You know, I and again, it just boggles my mind that people would come out to say that because of police shootings, there's more mass shootings. That's just ridiculous. Now, going back to the mental health issue, you know, one of the arguments that came up with the mental health issue was that, you know, as we discussed, people on antipsychotic medication, on the antidepressants, any of the psychoanalytic or the psychotropic medications, well, this is why they were causing the mass shootings. Problem being is that if we look at certain situations here, people were off of their medications when this had occurred. Aurora, Colorado, you know, our shooter out there went off of his medications and was off for a while. This wasn't like he went off the day before. He was off of them for at least 2 months where he was prescribed antipsychotic medications because he was, you know, at the time diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. He went off his medication for 2-3 months, which is not uncommon for a schizophrenic to do because they don't like feeling trapped by the medication, although that the medication helps them not do violent things. He gets off the medication, and then he creates the shooting. We know that in and of itself, the medication didn't make him do anything. It might have been the medication may have prevented it from happening. But again, he's in that small percentage with the mental health issue. Okay, so there we go. Those are the things that are not going on. Those are the things that are not happening, that they can't be a contributing factor to it. They just can't, based on our own reasons. So why then mass violence? Why then the mass shootings? Okay, you're going to have to run with me. I already said it earlier a little bit, where I said it was the combination of being able to get a gun, but also wanting fame, infamy. Okay, we have to understand that we need, or at least in our minds, we need to start blaming the shooters. Okay? We're in such a society right now that everybody points the finger at everybody else. It's incredible how we start blaming it. So here we go with the talking heads, you know, the reporters and so forth that came out there of saying, well, we're going to get into the minds of the family of these shooters, and then they're going to tell us the real deal because, you know, mommy and daddy didn't let them do blah, 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 or this, that, and the other thing. No. Come on. Let's go back and really kind of look at it. After a certain time, we have to stop blaming our parents or even society for the actions that we take. Okay? Out of all, hopefully, my officer friends or whatever that are listening right now, don't get angry with Dennis. They already know that you know, I have my little arrest record of fishing off a horseback. That's a whole other story we'll talk about, and I might do that on a podcast about, you know, stupid laws in the United States like fishing off horseback. But, you know, I was running late this morning, which, you know, it happens, and I did one of those California rolls through a stop sign. But, you know, nobody was around. And it seemed like, you know, I slowed down for that stop sign, you know, but, you know, nobody was there. So it must be okay, right? That was my choice. That was my decision. Now, as I sit here, here comes the police ready to lock me up for running a stop sign. But that was my decision. I made that decision. Oh, my mom and dad, Paul and Denny, didn't say, you know, let's let Dennis grow up immoral. Let's let him grow up that he believes that he could run stop signs. They didn't do that. That was my decision, for God's sakes. So if I make a decision to do something, then it's based on my reasoning, my intelligence, my moral development, my ethical response, and so forth. You know, we've talked about ethics before in another podcast, and real simple. You know, an ethical code of conduct is only worth anything if you commit to it and subscribe to it. You know, in the psychology world, we have the American Psychology Association or the American Counseling Association. And if we are members to those associations, or the National Board of Certified Counselors, if we are members of those associations, we have to subscribe to their code of conduct, their ethical code. Okay, the American Psychological Association has significant ethical code, or has a significant ethical code that we have to abide by. Okay, that is my doing, my understanding, and so forth. My mommy and daddy didn't tell me that I had to subscribe to it. I did it on my own, and I follow that code. But that's because of my base moral understanding of the things that I do in my world. Okay, so there we are. It's decision-based. So let's now start blaming the shooters themselves. Okay, this is how they start. You know, this is how it all begins. They have these, if we look at the general makeup to them, these folks grew up to utterly hate themselves as people and then blame those around them for their own self-loathing. Okay, we have to kind of look at these shooters as egotists. They're paranoid, and they're almost looking for some sort of power in society that they're not getting themselves. So what do? They sit around and they think of the way that they could burn the world. You know, that they basically have no control over their life because they haven't taken control over their life. So somewhere along the line, they get in their notion that I will become famous because I will commit this mass homicide. Virginia Tech, he had sent this manifesto, this 600-page manifesto to the NBC affiliates, you know, for them to read, because damn it, this will tell you, this is what's going on. Or another California shooter, he came out and did a vlog, a video log of saying that, you know, now he's going to kill women because women didn't accept him. You know, he hadn't had sex at the ripe old age of 23. He hadn't had sex yet, and that's because women rejected him. So now all women must die. Yeah, are you kidding me? These are directive resentment ideas that they use to then justify their behavior. Our shooter at Planned Parenthood, okay? Women should not abort babies. And then all of a sudden that becomes, I then will kill people in Planned Parenthood because I'm angry at them. I'm angry at what they're doing there. So I take it upon myself for the heroic measure in their mind that I'm going to kill them. Basically, it comes into the fact that they're falling into a deep depression with this certain thought of mass homicide. And then in most cases, it turns into a suicide because they want this idealized liberation from an existential insignificance. That they feel that if they're notorious, that they will live forever. And in all truth, they do. We can't think of Columbine without thinking of the shootings. We can't think of Newtown or Sandy Hook without the Sandy Hook Elementary shootings. We can't think of the World Trade Center without thinking of 9/11. That at some level, this insane decision that these people make actually kind of makes sense, because they live almost forever in our collective consciousness of our society. So what do we do? So we constantly look for these people. We constantly look for depressed, you know, white people that have intact families that, you know, that ultimately aren't getting laid and have money. Okay, literally, how many of those? 80 million? I mean, come on. We can't be so hypervigilant in our society that we forget that our society in and of itself is kind of breeding certain things. Okay, take it for what it's worth. And again, I go back that it might not be the violence of our society, but it might be the quickness of our society that's creating that almost egotistical, paranoid sense of self, that we have this hatred of humanity, and then we start putting responsibility on somebody else, and then we start blaming everybody else. Maybe it's just the quickness of how our society is. It boggles my mind of how we watch TV and how we watch certain shows and what becomes popular and what doesn't become popular. I'm still trying to figure out, for whatever it's worth, of what makes Caitlyn Jenner, and man, I even hate saying the name, what makes Caitlyn Jenner so incredible? I'm at a loss here. We start looking at people like that as our heroes in our society, that we're really forgetting the true heroes. So let's take a soldier that has returned from the Middle East, okay, that might have had PTSD, that might have had injury, that might have lost several buddies in a firefight or what have you. And we bring them back to say that, nah, you're not so much the hero. This dude that was an Olympic athlete that ultimately wants to have a sex change but really didn't go through completely with the sex change, he's our hero because he is so, so unbelievably brave. But you're cool. You know, you could come back and, you know, we'll treat you at the VA and, you know, maybe you'll have housing. Maybe we could find you a job. But wait a minute. Let's give the humanitarian award to this moron that, you know, has decided that he wants to be a woman. I come on, man. So now you have people that are coming back in our society that feel disposed of, that don't feel important. So if you have our society that doesn't feel important, doesn't that automatically mean society itself is starting to breed these type of shooters that ultimately start hating themselves and then hate other people in our society? I mean, we can go back and forth with that debate, but I think there's something to it, is that we are in a society that doesn't, A, take responsibility for what the hell we do, B, our hero system, the way that we're viewing people has changed, and then it's the quickness of our society. It's not what have you done for us, it's what have you done for us lately. So I think we have things pretty well screwed up. I don't know. I mean, the idea being is that we're on a continuum, which basically means is that if point A was no mass shootings whatsoever, and then point B is this unbelievable, you know, nastiness of the world, we got to look at where we are. Maybe we're midway. Maybe we're close to that tipping point. But something needs to be done in our society that we could point these people out a little bit more quickly. Maybe it's the fact that we get into the self-loathing and understand when people start feeling that way. Maybe it's something that we have to look at in our schools. Maybe, I don't know, call me crazy, is that we start investing more into our education of society. Maybe, oh my God, call me even crazier, we start investing more into mental health of our society versus this ridiculous level of idolism and heroism of people that are not idealistic or heroes. I don't know. I'm not saying that that's going to change everything, but maybe that's a point that we have to look at. That we have to look as mass shootings being preventable by some marked, I don't know, some endpoint marked by a pathway of resentment, social isolation, and profound despair. Maybe we have to look at people that are isolating themselves and then get them to understand that there's something better out there. Maybe we have to look at the the person that's in a despair situation and get them the help that they need. Maybe we have to include people that are trying to be secluded and get them to do more. Maybe we empower the people that are feeling powerless. I don't know. There's too much out there for us to pinpoint one exact thing on this continuum, but we know that at some level we're going to rage or we're going to continue to hear about these mass shootings on a daily basis instead of every week or something. We're going to start hearing more and more. Now, you know, the end point before I wrap things up is maybe, you know, the other part is that we stop making these folks famous. Maybe, just maybe, and I put this out there, maybe we stop sensationalizing this. Maybe we stop putting it in the media. Maybe we stop, you know, writing stories about it. Maybe we stop, you know, listening to this drivel about people. You know, and I look at it. I look at certain things is that if we didn't have, I don't know, if we didn't have any media coverage in Virginia Tech, would that have stopped Sandy Hook Elementary shooting? If we didn't have any media coverage in Aurora, Colorado, would that have stopped? Would that have stopped Colorado Springs? You know, with that, I don't know, but maybe that's a start. Maybe we stop sensationalizing this stuff and stop giving these people fame and notoriety. All right, maybe we stop looking at who these people are and stop giving a damn and basically walking away and saying, look, here's the help. Let's get you included in society. Let's get you to stop feeling despair. Let's get you to feel more empowerment and stop hating humanity versus waiting till after the fact to make these people famous. I don't know. It's just a thought. It's just a thought out there. We can't change what our society ultimately does unless we start at a very, very small, real level. On the closing side with that, you know, look at any type of movement right now that's going on. And again, I just point out that, it has nothing to do with it, but the Black Lives Matter movement to it, okay? They do things for sensationalism, and the supporters to this who ultimately want, you know, police taken down or whatever it is, media is following them. So more and more people are joining them because of what they see on the media. If you look at statistics wise, that number continues to rise based on the reports have been out there and surveys have been out there about what they've seen in the media. Okay. So my thought is it a huge stretch to say that these folks that are committing these mass shootings are watching that end result in the media and saying, wow, well, that's how I become famous. That's how my name gets out there. That's how I burn society. And if you look at statistics, I might have proven myself there a little bit. So those are my thoughts. Good, bad, right, wrong, or indifferent. I have to champion my position that, you know, mental health needs to be bolstered, and we need to understand people, and we need to include people. You know, we need to stop placing blame on everybody else. We need to stop looking and pointing the fingers and start looking at ourselves and looking at the houses we keep and who we have around us. Remember, it has to start individually. It has to start from within us. I put a little meme up on the Trauma Survivors Foundation's Facebook that says, you know, peace needs to start within. And the more that we look at ourselves and we try to better our society by that conscious individual choice, then ultimately we're going to take away a lot of the problems that we have had. And hopefully we'll continue to take those problems away. I don't know. You know, is it 100%? No. But it could work. It could work if each person starts taking responsibility. You know, I made the joke the other day about, you know, how everybody blames everybody else. You know, you don't see that in other societies. You don't see people that continuously blame everybody else. You know, they find out who did it and they take care of it. Us, my God. You know, we blame everybody and everything for our own problems. You know, we have to stop people. You wake up every morning on your own accord and you either work or you do dumb shit based on what you think you should do. Okay, that's all on you. That's not on me. I didn't make you do what you did. You made yourself do. You could either bring yourself out of fear and go to these great heights, or you could continue to stay in fear and create more problems. But again, I think it goes back to the individual. I think it goes back to the person. I think it goes back to each member of our society to change how these outcomes are, to change how these mass shootings happen. Those are just my thoughts. I will stick to them. As I always say, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am tonight, but who knows? I could be. So if you have any questions or thoughts, or if you think that my rantings were totally deranged, then make sure you drop me an email at Dennis@NewPerspectivesInc.com or Dennis@TraumaSurvivorsFoundation.com. On a very happy note, I'd like to make a little announcement. On Wednesday, December 16th, the Trauma Survivors Foundation and the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge Number 1, that's here in Wilmington, Delaware, are hosting a Fill the Bus for the Food Bank of Delaware. We're going to help fill three buses with food, holiday items, and non-food items. The Fill the Bus locations will be in Wilmington at the ShopRite on South Walnut Street and the Trolley Square Acme on North DuPont Street, and at the Middletown Chamber of Commerce on North Cass Street. All three job off locations will have a bus to fill from 7:30 a.m. until 6 p.m. The goal is to gather 20,000 pounds of food for the Delaware Food Bank. 1 pound of food is considered a meal, so you can help feed 20,000 Delawareans. Pretty wild, I think. You could actually stop by and see Paula from the morning crew of WXCY 103.7 FM at the Acme and Trolley Square from 4 until 6 p.m. And she is one of the coolest people we know. She's pretty awesome. They're going to be by there. They're going to have the mobile shout outs and all that great stuff. And you have to listen to WXCY FM. They're going to do, it's like points or whatever it is, but there's something cool going on there. So you got to give them a call. We love WXCY folks, and I'm very happy that they're involved with the foundation. But if you can't make it to the Fill the Bus, any of those locations, you could donate online at the traumasurvivorsfoundation.com. You just click the Fill the Bus tab, and donations could also be dropped off at the foundation's office. So just go to the traumasurvivorsfoundation.com. You can get complete details from there. But basically it breaks down to certain deals. If you, I think one of our stats was if you gave $50, that could buy 100 meals for people. $75 can buy 150 meals. And then $100 can buy 200 meals for people. Last count, they call it food deficient. You know, there was over 200,000 Delawareans and in the Maryland area that are food deficient. You know, we need to stop hunger. Let's start it at home first. We're looking at 20,000 pounds. You know, that could be a real easy number or a real difficult number depending on everybody out there. So again, please make sure you get out there. Please make sure you stop by or go to the website again. It is the traumasurvivorsfoundation.com. Go under the tab that says Fill the Bus. And make a donation. You could do it right online. It's real easy. It's a PayPal account. It makes it even more easy. And it is tax deductible because the Trauma Survivors Foundation is a 501c3. So make sure that, again, Wednesday, December 16th, but we're accepting donations online that will ultimately go to the Food Bank of Delaware. So that is the show for tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope everything's okay out there. You know, please take the time to tell people in your life that you love and care for them. Life happens very, very quickly. Life happens very, very fast. And if we don't stop and take that time just to tell people that we love them, just to tell people that we care about them, then we might not have that chance, which I don't like. I'd rather have that chance. But please stay tuned for us again. I'm going to try to get back on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. If you have any type of topic that you'd like for me to talk about, or even if you have a guest that you'd like to hear, please give me an email again, once again, Dennis at newperspectivesinc.com or Dennis at the traumasurvivorsfoundation.com. Have a great night. Be safe out there. Thanks for listening.
Ohio.